They're all men dressed in like cow hides, and they have like these big masks on.
If I hear the bells on Klausentag, my whole body is uncomfortable. It's so deep inside, you cannot believe.
Like, I remember a severed goat leg on the table. One of them, like, I remember dunked a chicken head, like a severed chicken head, like a real one, into my glass of wine and was like, drink it.
Hello and welcome to Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I'm your host, Jordan Prince. This week, we are going to do things a little bit differently because Mo and I both had a lot of extra garbage on our plate this week, to be honest. And basically what that means is that we're going to talk about a very special event that takes place in Germany in certain villages in very different ways called Klausentag. It's on December 6th every year, and it's taken place for a long time. We're going to do it in two separate parts, and this week, I'm going to take the lead by telling you my experience with Klausentag, my perception of it, my relationship to it, my unbound fear towards it. Basically, as a foreigner, you know, I visited this place knowing nothing about this weird, special holiday. And so earlier I recorded my story, and I'm going to share that with you soon. And we also have a story from an elder, a wise man who has seen many, many different generations of this take place. I'm very excited to share his insight about Klausentag. I'm going to leave that as a little bit of a teaser. And we have a story from another foreigner, a friend of mine from America who only once and probably never again visited Germany to see Klausentag, specifically in that time of the year. And she has quite the tale to tell, if I do say so myself. But we're really happy that you guys are here and that you're listening. We hope that you are excited about the holidays and maybe even more excited for the end of 2020. It is getting closer. Just here at the top of the show, I would like to say that if you are a fan of this show, if you like to listen every week, please tell a friend about us. Help spread the word and, you know, get someone involved. If you want to support the show, what you can do is go to patreon.com/Jordan Prince. Hey, that's me. You can go there, and for as low as $3 a month, you can support this show, what we do here. You can help us build, save money towards better equipment. You can buy us a pizza. Anything like that really goes a long way. And, you know, whatever platform you're listening to this on, you can give us a share. And especially what's most important is if you are an artsy fartsy immigrant or you know somebody who is, you can write us on Instagram at artsy fartsy immigrants. You can follow us there to see updates about new shows, about new content. We also share promo from our previous guests, what they're up to now. Or you can send an email to podcast@m945.de. Thank you so much for those who are already supporting us on Patreon and who have already left comments or ratings or shared us on iTunes. That really helps new people find us. So thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and play the first story of this episode, which is maybe selfishly my own. But this was my experience with Klausentag, and I hope you like it. So Klausentag is this very old tradition that takes place in different parts of Germany. And I think every region of Germany, and maybe even other parts of Europe, it takes place in different ways. There's different costumes, different rituals, But I think in general, it all kind of means the same thing. I think it represents kind of a cleansing to cast out these evil spirits and to give a fresh sort of welcoming to St. Nicholas. And in Oberstdorf, where Mo is from and where Efi is from, it's done in a very unique way. In this town, it's done in a way that can be pretty terrifying, but it can also be kind of fun. And I remember the first couple of times that I went to Oberstdorf for Klausentag. Actually, I still really vividly remember the first time that I went. I guess I moved here about 5 years ago, so it was that first Christmas. It was 2015. So I haven't gone every single year. I think I've gone 3 times. And I am not really sure how to feel about it every time that I talk about it. Basically, one really important thing that you should know is that my brother-in-law is sort of a really popular guy in this town. He's very successful and he has a lot of friends. And he lives in a house directly in the center of this town. So when the Klausen, that's what you call the men in the costumes, the Klausen, when they're running around, you have to imagine that they all know him. They all know who he is. And they know that he lives right in the center of the town. So, you know, they kind of make a beeline for his house. They make it a goal or sort of they make his house a target sort of for their destruction. He doesn't always let them in. He's not always in the mood for the festivities. And I'm kind of thankful for that he's not extremely excited every year to participate. But sometimes he is. And I've been there a couple of the times when he let them in. So the routine of the evening, at least in this family, goes like this. Basically, we would meet there at my brother-in-law's house relatively early, maybe late afternoon. And we would go there with the parents and the grandparents when they were alive and make a really nice sort of wintry style dinner out of the whole thing. Either it was I think it was just a very large broodsite. Broodsite, of course, we've talked about it on the show before, but it's a very common German meal. And it's with bread and it translates to bread time. So it's with bread and butter and you have different meats and vegetables and cheeses and stuff. And I think we made one of those. And then they're always making this really traditional wintertime drink called Glühwein. And I think most people would know what this is. It's mulled wine. It's like a hot, sweet wine. It tastes like a warm punch. It's really delicious, and it's very easy to get pretty drunk on it. And we'd make that, and we'd make the food. And then at some point, I'm not exactly sure of the time. I know Mo is going to know this, but I think around 7 or 8 o'clock, I'm not positive, they have the main Klausen run. So the main Klausen run is when everyone gathers to the main street, and the main street goes uphill pretty far into the mountain. And everyone lines up kind of like you're expecting a parade to start. And you hear in the distance several big jangling weighted cowbells. And the noise builds and builds and builds, and you realize there's, I don't know, maybe 100 people with these big bells on their waist, like a belt. And that sound is so, it's so unique to this event. It's really scary, actually. and it's impressive. It's such a dynamic effect, and it's so practical. You know, it's just cowbells, but it works in a really interesting way. And they, from the main road, you see, all of a sudden you hear the bells getting closer and closer and closer. And then this is the main Clausen run, where they say, okay, like the evening is starting now. So they all run through the main street, and you get to see, I don't know, sometimes 60, sometimes 100, sometimes maybe more. I think in the older days it was even more. But a lot of people. And the special thing about how they look probably comes most from their headdress, from their helmet. A lot of these are passed down from different generations. Some of them are made new, but they're all really authentic, genuine material, sort of mascot heads. The only downside for them is that they have these really tiny eye holes. So you can avoid them, I found out, you know, pretty easily if you just move around in a certain way. They can't see so well at night, especially because they're also getting drunk. But they have normally these huge sort of, I don't know, like, I guess Mo can describe it better, but these huge fur sort of animal replicant mascot heads with, you know, cow fur or goat fur on them, with patches of different colors, and then like real horns coming out, like bull horns coming out of the top. And it's really an impressive image. It's a really stark and like scary image to see, especially when they're just, you know, pounding down the street at full speed. You can tell they're a little bit liquored up. They've got a lot of adrenaline, and they're looking for you. They want you. So that's kind of an exhilarating thing. And as the routine continues, you know, they come down the main street, and, you know, sometimes, you know, they have these, my mom would call it a switch. They have these long, slender wooden sticks that they can swing very quickly, and they pop on your leg and they hurt like hell. And, you know, sometimes on the main street, they might stop on the sidewalk and give you a few pops or whatever, and then they just keep running. And they're not supposed to do too much on that main run. This is just like the opening event. But from then on out, until sunrise, a lot of the Clausen will stay out in the town. And it's, you know, for the teenagers, it's kind of a game. They go out and they try to get caught, and there's, you know, countless stories from friends of mine, you know, from that region, who talk about, you know, I don't know, having a few drinks and running around, trying to avoid them, getting busted, you know, getting like punished or whatever. And I think when you grow up there, I mean, when you're a little young kid, I think it can be kind of traumatizing for a lot of them. But when you're older, when you understand that it's just people in masks, then I think you can have some fun with it. Especially when you see their weaknesses, like how they can't see so well. But so when they run, normally we would go back to my brother-in-law's house, and sometimes we'd stand on the second floor balcony, and then you can look out and you can see, you know, people getting chased, and you can hear the bells clinging in the distance, and, you know, you're just having like warm Glühwein and you're safe there. But like I said before, everyone knows him, and the main thing about Clausen, it's a bit like in folklore with vampires or something. You know, you have to invite them in. So the thing is, they go throughout the night sort of chasing down teenagers, but the main thing that they do, their main purpose, is to be invited into people's homes where they sit down at the table and they're offered drinks. So they, you know, when they sit down, they remove their helmets, then they're just people, and then they're drinking, you know, this schnapps that's native to that region, Enzian, and beer, and I guess they're eating some leftover sausages and bread and stuff. And I was always told that once they sit down at this point, once they've rested and the helmets are off, that it's not as scary anymore. But the thing is that at some point, it's time for them to go. And all they've been doing since they've been sitting down is getting their energy back. So when they put the helmets back on, they are sort of blackened with rage, and they have this new adrenaline and this new power. And there was this one particular year, I think it was about 3 years ago, when I had gone there reluctantly. I don't always like to go. And I was sitting at the table with my brother-in-law and some of his friends and Ify, and they let the Klausen in. It was maybe four or five guys. And these guys are really young. One important thing that I forgot to mention is that to be a Klausen, you have to be a bachelor. So it's usually young, single men, late teens, early 20s, things like that. And they all came in. You know, they make a lot of noise. They bang on the walls. They stomp the floors. They growl. They scream. They really try to scare you. Kind of like if you go through a haunted house and some guy has like a fake chainsaw and a clown mask. That's that vibe. But then they sit down and they take the masks off. And then I recognized a few of them, and they knew me, of course. You know, I'm in this town a lot. I'm the only loud American guy. So they knew me too. And so we were talking. It was very friendly. It was kind of fun. They had like crazy bloody animal parts. And it was a weird, but kind of comforting experience with the whole thing. But then they put the helmets back on. And that's when I got a little scared, because they, you know, they knew me. And they were already in the house, and they were about to get crazy again. I think my mistake was a very poorly timed cigarette. I swear to God, I think my shower curtain just fell, and that petrified me just now. Oh man, where was I? So I think my mistake was a poorly timed cigarette. I knew that they were getting ready to go, and they were being really friendly still, so I went out with one to smoke a cigarette. And oh man, we stood there, and all of a sudden the other four or whatever came out of the house, and they had their helmets on and they were ready to go. And the one I was talking to, this look in his eyes changed. And he bent down to put the helmet on, and he came up really like raging fast and with all this energy, and he kind of grappled with me. And you know, you remember these helmets have these long real antlers on them, or horns, both. And he came up, and the horn cut my forehead from my eyebrow to the peak of my hairline. And man, you know, just to be kind of tipsy and to see this monster in front of you, and then you touch your head and there's blood, you know, it's kind of a scary, like a freaky event. I mean, now, of course, to anyone who's from this region, and to anyone who's like trying to prove something about being like a real tough guy for some reason, this sounds like such a, probably like I'm like a big baby or something, but it was really crazy, and I'm not used to this at all. And, you know, then they were, maybe I'm getting one of the experiences, the two bad ones, mixed up, but this one I think was the same one where they like had me on my knees outside and they were telling me to sing. I started to sing some song from the band. And then at some point I just got up and ran to the corner of the fence in the yard, but, you know, they couldn't see so well, so they looked for like a second, and then I just dipped behind the house, and then they ran off back into the night. And I ran into the house, and then I was just bleeding, and I was upset. And you know what the reaction was? Everyone just laughed. Everyone was just like, well, they got you. And I was just there, you know, and I had to get over it. And I had to really just accept that this is just a totally different culture from what I'm used to. They were never really going to cause like serious pain. It was just, you know, maybe the cut was an accident. They just wanted to give me a scare and rough me up a bit because I'm the American guy. And then I felt kind of, you know, what do you call it? Like hazed. Like I was welcomed finally into the club, like a fraternity. I was kind of like, okay, I went through it. I didn't like it so much, but it didn't kill me. And now we're all laughing about it. And I'm just being offered drinks and hearing good stories and good jokes. And there's something about it that I understand people being drawn to, but I think still, when I get the choice to go there or not, I'm probably going to choose not to go. Okay, that's my story. I hope you liked it. I hope I didn't turn you off too much from it. I think what will be a nice change of pace here from my sort of naive approach to this whole experience would be to just send you to the wise man. The master of storytelling, the mage of magic. He's an interesting guy. Let's put it that way. A very interesting guy who has seen many, many different generations of this take place. I think he's going to have a very different perspective on this than I ever did. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sepp. Do you have any insight into the history of Klausentag? Do you know when it started or why it started?
I think it was an old behavior, and it was before Christ. As far as I know, it's very old, and it was a pagan thing that happened since ever. It was here in the mountains, you know. It's I know from my grandfather, from my father, I know from everybody that there were Klausen on 6th of December every evening.
Okay, and so it's been like thousands of years.
it's been I think so. I'm not well educated. But all these old behaviors like Wilde Männle, like Klausen, they're very, very old. And they especially happened in valleys very close to the mountains. And as far as I know, it happened in the Alps, you know, in Austria, in Oberbayern, in Allgäu. And I think it has a close relationship to the Alpine, people.
Do you know, like, what it's supposed to represent? Because there's, of course, things like this, you imagine it's, you know, like chasing away evil spirits or something. Is it connected like that?
I think it was like that. Yeah, it was, it's always on 6th of December, so it's the start of the winter. Mm-hmm. And I could imagine, but I don't know it exactly, that they tried to to keep away the ghosts of winter and cold and everything. I think this is the thing it was, but I'm no specialist in that.
Would you say that it's gotten more intense over the years or less intense? In terms
less
of like,
intense, no.
Yeah,
you know, you cannot imagine how it was when I was a boy, but it was even harder when my father was a boy. And, you know, in former times, nobody went out on the street like today. Today, children are going out having fun, but when I was a child, the best thing on Klausentag was when they were gone and I could go to bed. I never would have out of the street. Never, never, never.
What did they, when it was your father's generation, I mean, what did they do? What were they known for?
Yeah, they were very brutal. You know, nobody went on the streets with the exception of a grown-up man, but no children, no women. And my father always told me a story about his uncle when he went Klausen. Mm-hmm. And he told him the story that there were some men sitting in a restaurant drinking beer, playing cards in the evening. And there was one woman. She was called the Bierschnatter. And she was kind of a loose woman.
She was a loose woman?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she said on Klausentag, in such a restaurant with guys drinking beer. And somehow the Klausen got known of it. And they went into this restaurant. They pulled her out of the restaurant, undressed her completely, and then they chased her through a whole village.
Oh my God!
Threw her in a wooden well. Is that okay? Wooden well?
Like a well in the forest.
A well or a fountain or how's
yeah.
it called, you know?
Like the deep.
There's water inside where cows can drink out.
Yeah, a well. Mm-hmm.
So they were always wooden wells, you know?
Oh, okay.
And they threw her into this well and chased her down the whole village. Until the road to Sonthofen began, you know?
Oh my God.
So you can imagine what it was in that time. And the funny thing is that she went to the police.
She went to the police to complain about the violence and they didn't do anything about it?
Yeah. She did her, how do you say, when you want the police to...
She went to accuse.
She went to the police, yeah. And said, "Hey, arrest these guys because you see what they did to me." And my father's uncle, he was sent to jail, I think, for 14 days or so. And the funny thing is that she had done some bad things too, and also went into the same jail. and my father's uncle. He was a good worker. He was a timber worker, and so he wanted to work in the jail. And they said, "Okay, you can distribute the food." And he distributed the food. And one of the prisoners he had to distribute the food was the Vishnada, the woman that they mistreated on Klausenberg. And he always said. He brought her the meal and always spit into the.
Oh my God!
Yeah. That's a really funny story. But yes, yeah, now you can imagine how it was. It was not.
It was not PC.
It was not thinkable. It was not.
Yeah, it was like incomprehensible that you would even mess around with these things.
It was really incomprehensible that a woman went into a restaurant on Klausentag. So in former times, the Klausen, they came into the houses. They had no fun on the streets like it's today.
Oh, okay.
And everybody sat at home and they waited until they came. And I had the luck that when I was a child, that I knew exactly they came one time. They mistreated us, and we knew exactly when they were gone. We went into bed, and then it was over.
Right.
And it was the happiest evening whole year because we knew that the next big party will be Christmas party with the Christkind, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus child. Mm-hmm. And from it was the worst day, but it was the happiest evening.
When you were a little kid like that, and they would come into the house, what would they do in the house? Because I've seen it myself nowadays, what happens when they come in the house, but I imagine it's pretty different.
Yeah, we sit around the table with my sisters, my parents, my grandparents. We were waiting there, and we had such a bad gut feeling. We were so terrified in front, and you heard some bells somewhere, and then you started sweating, and then it got louder and louder, and they knocked on the window. We always closed the wooden window
with the shutters, sort of.
The shutters, and they it was normally it were three or so, and then they came inside. Everybody tried to get into the last edge that they could not take you out, but then they said, okay, Josef, come out, and if you would not come out, they're gonna pull you out over the table. And then they told you some of the things you had done, of the bad things, and said, oh, what did you do there? And said, oh, I'll never do that again. And then normally we had to pray, we had to kneel down.
Yeah.
We had to pray, to say a prayer. We had to sing a song or something. And then we got, after all this, they didn't hurt us, you know. They took us, they shook us, it was not a physical thing. It was a
psychological.
It was a psychological thing, you know. We were so scared, you know. It began 4 or 6 weeks before Klausentag, and if something happened, always our mother said, "If you don't do that, I will tell it to the Klausen." And we were so good boys. We were so well behaved over 4 or 6 weeks. But after Klausentag, everything was gone, and we were forever. And you know, as children, we did not know that these were human beings.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
These were monsters out of the mountains, and my father had names, and the names came from the mountains around. And there was a Schatterberger, the Kieberger, and he told me the whole. You know, they're somewhere in a hole. They live and they come out.
Oh my God.
And, yeah.
So how old were you?
When you get older,
yeah,
you talk with your comrades and your buddies, and they say, hey, that's not, that's a real man, and so, I was very proud. I said, oh, I know that these are not monsters, these are human beings. And then what happened, one day, me and my best friend Mühle, we came from school, and on our way home, there was a garage along our school, school way, or how do you say?
Yeah, on the way to school,
On the way to school, there was a garage.
Yeah.
And on the windowsill, there was some pipe tobacco. And we stole that pipe tobacco to try to smoke. And the woman, the family was called Suchi, and the woman who owned the garage saw us stealing this tobacco.
Oh,
and
man.
She called my mother, and my mother didn't say anything. It was maybe 2 weeks before Klausentag.
Oh no.
And then it was the old story. They came in, I had to come out, but I said, these are human beings, I don't believe this old shit. And then he said, who stole this tobacco out of Suki's garage? And I couldn't speak anymore. Yeah, and I believed, hey, my father's right. They are not human beings. How can you know that?
That's so good, man.
That was Hauk-Lausentag was. Yeah.
That's terrifying. That's so scary. Yeah, so how old were you, do you think, when you finally realized that they were just guys?
I don't know, 10 or 12 or don't know, okay. Something like that.
Okay. Oh, man. So when they came in the house, when you were a kid, they never took the helmets off, I guess, right? Because now when I've been there, they always take the helmets off. Even whenever Efi was also a kid, they took the helmets off, right?
No, never. No. When Efi kids, they didn't take the helmet off. They came in. They punished us. They gave us little gifts, and then they went away. I never saw a head of a Clausen. First time was when I went Clausen myself. Never saw a head. They never took off.
I have this feeling that until you were like 17 or 18, you still weren't really sure if they were human or not until you became one.
I was sure, but it didn't help, you know. It's now I'm 59 years old, and if I hear the bells on Clausentag, I always have a bad gut feeling. My whole body is uncomfortable. It's so deep inside, you cannot believe.
I definitely understand that, because whenever I talk to anybody who was anyone, especially who's not a Clausen, who grew up there, like, it's not that many people, but a few of the girls I've spoken to, it's the same instinct. It's like you hear one bell in the distance and you get immediately, you know, fear, and you're shaking and your eyes are wide open. But how, so that was when you were a kid. How was it when you finally became one? Like, did the rules change a bit, or, you know, what was like a crazy situation when you were behind the mask?
Yeah, it changed. You know, the first time I went Clausen, I was 16 or 17 or something like that. And we dressed and we made our dress and everything and the horns. And then I started to walk in, and I saw other Clausen, and I was so scared to see Clausen. And then I realized, they won't hit me because I'm a Klaus too. Yeah, but you know, we visited some. We never ran around this big round how it is today. So we had, don't know, 5, 6, 7 houses where we went into. The first houses with children, and we did our job as I described it. And we never took off our, don't say helmets, I say heads. You know, it's called head.
It's like Clausen a head, yeah. It's like a big, like a cow.
We never put off our heads, but then we went to families of friends. Then we had some beers and some schnapps, and then you put off your head and you go into the next one. And I always love to go into houses, private houses. I never like to run around. And then it began. The children were around, and they wanted to
try it, like pick up the head, or
no? But they ran away, and then they said bad things. So I didn't like this. Never. I always liked it. Went to go into houses, and in the first house you had one beer, in the second two, and then in the last house you stayed until 5 or 6 in the morning.
How many years did you do it, you think?
I don't know.
4 or 5?
Not too long, because I was very young when I got father. I was 21.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to leave my wife and my son alone, so I did it, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, not more.
Okay. And when do you think, like, from the time that you were a Clausen, you know, did you see even more shifts from when your son became one, or when, you know, like when Efi was a kid and stuff, did it change even more? Because now when I see it, like, the stories, like, the way that I experience it now, of course, for me is intense because I've never seen anything like that before. But, you know, for me, it's wild as it is. But when I hear about stories from the past, it does seem like it got crazier. I mean, do you, like, being from there, do you still have a lot of respect for the ritual itself, or do you think it's lost some of the original essence that it had, or how do you feel about it now?
You know, I'm an old white man. And yeah, you know, there are more and more young people who never had this experience as a young boy, because everybody can run as Clausen. So many of them, they don't know the traditions and they don't know how to behave. They don't even, you know, there are some special screens. There's some special behaviors, and yeah, there are more and more who don't even speak the right dialect, you know, and a Klaus who doesn't speak a dialect is kind of a clown, you know. That's the problem. But there are enough young guys who have know the tradition, and they go around, they often go into houses, and when Ify was a kid and my children were small and we had Klausen at our house, we always had young guys from Oberstdorf who knew exactly how to do and how to behave. And I think they are still around, but now if I stay at my son's house, there are many friends of him, and it's more fun, you know.
Do you see the numbers of Klausen per year getting less? Do you imagine that one day it will stop?
I don't think so.
No.
You know, we have the Wilde Mendles dance. It's the oldest dance of whole Europe. It's more than 2,000 years old, so I don't think it will stop. And you know, there are always young boys who had the same experiences as I had, and I hope they will have it in the future too, and I'm convinced it will survive this old behavior.
Do you have any advice for someone like Mo Bat, who is a you know, would be a Klausen in a few days this year if it wasn't for Corona?
Yeah. To have a small group, to go in special houses, to try to do it with children. I think this is something you learn how to behave, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just running around the streets and beating up some guys around like you. There's another good story. I played hockey, you know, and we had some teammates from the USA. They were college boys playing one season ice hockey here in Oberstdorf.
Mm-hmm.
And we practiced the day after Klausen, and they said, "Hey man, yesterday there were Hirsch monsters around." And they were so frightened, and they got into a fight because they said they attacked us, and they were good fighters, so they knocked them down. and the name Hirsch monsters was great, yeah.
Oh man, that's
yeah.
So
I
good.
Think it's a nice old behavior, and I hope it will stay for the next 100 years. And I'm convinced that it will.
Nice. Thank you so much, man, for your stories and for the humor. And I appreciate it a lot. We're really thankful that you decided to call and talk about it.
Yeah, sorry for my bad English, but
we've had worse.
Okay,
no
so
problem.
All the best, and I hope, as I heard today, this year the Klausentag will not take place. So you can come to Oberstdorf without fear and without being horrified and terrified and scared and frightened. And I invite you to come, and I can tell you some good old stories about old days.
All right, I'm in. It sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. All right, Josef, thank you so much. And yeah, I'll see you soon.
Okay, see you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you so much, Yosef, for those great stories and those good laughs. We really appreciate it. Some insider knowledge right from the source. That's really special. That's the kind of quality content you're going to get right here on Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I want to give you guys one more story, one more perspective from and about Klausentag that I think you're going to appreciate. It's a nice, funny one to wrap up this part one about it. It's from the perspective of my good friend, Sarah. She is a martial arts master. She's a great photographer. She's a lovely person all around. She's one of mine and Ify's best friends. And she, I mentioned her in my story. She came for Klausentag a few years ago. And this is her takeaway on it. So I'll just let her go from here.
So, Klausentag. If you've heard of this, I hadn't heard of it until one of my great good friends, Ify Geiger, who is from Oberstdorf, Germany, enlightened me on this occasion, which at the time that she told me about it, it was like, oh, it's like this tradition in this town, this like Bavarian mountain town in Germany, in the south of Germany, where it's like, think Krampus. I don't know. It's like, do they live in the mountains or something? And then every year on December 6th, they like come into the town and like rid the town of demons. I think I'm remembering this correctly. But anyway, it never really sounded too terrifying to me as like my friend Ify described it to me, because, you know, like she would just talk about like this tradition and how like it was like her favorite time of the year. And this is coming from someone talking about Ify who is not like, I don't want to, she, you know, scares easy, I guess. So like, I never thought of it as anything terrifying. And then I was lucky enough to travel to Germany to celebrate, Ify's birthday, which is late November. And then, you know, I was still there for December 6th, which is when it happens. And she was like, yeah, like we're gonna go, it's gonna be great. And then day of, she like, you know, starts getting a little anxious. She's like, you know, she's still pumped about it, but she's a little anxious. And I was like, oh fuck, what am I going into? I think I only experienced it one time because Jordan was also there, and I don't remember if my first time experiencing it was his first time experiencing it. I'm not sure. But anyway, whatever. Cut to, we are in Oberstdorf, and you know, like the initial part is that they all run through the streets, and these are people, like they're all men dressed in like cow hides, and they have like these big masks on, and like they're covered in cowbells, and I don't even know. So, like, the way they kick it off is that they, like, run down this main street of the town, kind of like a herd. anyway, so we're waiting, and Ify is, like, you know, like, she's excited like a little kid, but she also, like, kind of wants to run away. And I'm thinking, this girl has experienced this every year of her life, and she's still scared of it, so what the fuck's about to happen? And they all run through the main street and immediately start whipping people, like with whips. And I'm thinking, wow, like if this happened where I live, like how would it be received? You know what I mean? It's like, what is this? Anyway, so Ify has already run down the street at this point. Like she just ran away, like probably in an alley somewhere. I don't know. But anyway, so cut to, everyone kind of like scatters, and the idea is that you go into your houses while they like go around, you know, doing their thing, terrorizing or cleansing the town of demons. Again, unclear. Anyway, so we go to her brother's house, and apparently, like, you know, if you're like a well-known person in the town, they'll like come in and have a drink if you leave your door unlocked. It's kind of like they like break up into pods and they like, you know, go around town, you know, like make their little stops, and they'll come into your house and they'll cause a ruckus. But then like, you know, then they'll like take their masks off and have a drink with you. And they did that. And I remember, man, they were carrying around like chicken heads and like I remember a severed goat leg on the table. One of them, like I remember dunked a chicken head, like a severed chicken head, like a real one, into my glass of wine and was like drinking. And I was like, no. And then he drank it. I was like, you are, like, I don't even know. We were all a little tipsy at this point, and they, you know, like, as they make stops around the town, like, they're getting more and more belligerent because everyone's, like, feeding them alcohol, because that's what they do. And then we get to the most terrifying part. Poor Jordan. He, you know, American boy, and they know he's becoming more, you know, like, better known in this town. And they know he's a singer, a musician. And, you know, like, they, like, once they, like, they're ready to make their exit, they, like, get rowdy again, and they put their masks back on, and that's when you know that they're about to, like, you know, do their crazy shit again. And I think I remember them just saying, like, hey, like, sing a song for us to Jordan. And I remember them grabbing him, like, by the chest, like, by the jacket, and ripping him off of this bench, and like all of the color drained from his face. And I mean, I can't imagine how he felt, because I was scared. And they dragged him outside. And I think they were, you know, it was like a situation like, hey, we're not gonna whip you. This sounds fucking crazy saying this out loud, like that this happened. And you know, like basically we won't whip you if you sing us a song. And I'm pretty sure he may have been on his knees. I didn't witness it like firsthand, but I was still inside the house because I didn't want to leave. And yeah, I think they made him sing a song, and maybe they whipped him anyway because it sounds like something they would do. And then, you know, we were able to kind of witness it from the safety of a like a dark balcony, so they couldn't see us. But like, I have a video still on my phone of like, you can hear like the cowbells jingling in the distance, and it's so eerie. And then they like come around a corner, and like a bunch of kids are outside because it's like a fun thing, and like, you know, like trying not to get caught, but still like trying to get caught at the same time. And I remember them like trying to, you know, like telling the kids to like get on their knees and say a prayer or something, and then they probably whipped them. Not, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, they weren't like hurting the kids or anything, but whew, man, I haven't really thought about this story in a long time. And I'm like, every time I bring it up, I'm like, what is that? Like, I can't believe I feel so grateful to have experienced that like little piece of their tradition. That is so crazy to me. But anyway, that's my take on Klausentag. And yeah, hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I feel like we did, and I know that I did. And I want to thank you guys for listening to part one of the Klausentag special here on Artsy Farsi Immigrants. I hope you got a good laugh. I hope you learned something about this insane holiday. And I want to just repeat here that if you do support shows like this and content like this, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince. To support us financially. And even maybe as important or more important, you can go to wherever you're listening to this program. You can share us on Spotify. You can go to iTunes, give us a comment or a share or a review. It really helps new people find us and to find these stories. You can tell a friend about us. It goes a long way for shows like this. If you or someone you know is an artsy-fartsy immigrant, or you have a comment or a criticism that you'd like for us to know about, you can write us directly on Instagram at artsy-fartsy-immigrants, or you can send us an email to podcast@m945.de. Thank you again so much for listening. Thank you, Mo, for producing this episode. And I'm so excited to bring you guys part two next week. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
окото спейсер вайлец, с кришкин для коти е заглохен. Ти любила сестринка.